Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Improve Something Today. It's me. It's Brian. Bring you an idea from the world of lean and continuous improvement, except I haven't been doing that lately. Once again, instead of an idea, I have a person. I'm joined by my dear friend, Devin Persing, who we'll get into conversation with in just a moment. By way of introduction, I should say that Devin and I almost collided or maybe slightly overlapped in grad school, thousands of miles away, 15 years ago. And we've been sort of orbiting around the occasional pitcher of beer ever since. Devin is a UX leader. She's done a lot of work in accessibility, and she's working up at Shopify, not the music one, but the making a store one. And I'm just delighted that Devin is able to join us for a couple of minutes today. But with no further ado, I bring you Devin Persing.
Hello.
How the hell are you?
I miss having beer with you. I'm not bad. It's actually sunny today. And my allergies are better. So just working at home, sitting at my little desk, doing my little tasks.
How's your little desk doing, whatever it is, 13 months into our little desk thing that we're all doing?
So I've been working remotely for about 5 years altogether. So that part hasn't been that different. It's mostly been adjusting to working with people who are not used to working remotely that has been a change. But my company has decided to go fully remote forever. So, which has been nice. It was more stressful being kind of one of the little or big heads on a projector in an office, talking to a whole bunch of people in a conference room I couldn't hear very well. It's much nicer to just be like in a wall of heads in a call. So in general, like working remotely has actually gotten easier, strangely.
Yeah, it's weird. I really struggled with working remotely for a while, and then I did a project last fall. So, you know, what, like 6 months into everybody being in their little rectangles, with a company that has their like fancy office in Seattle with a couple hundred employees in it. And they very much identified as we're a Seattle company. But if you looked at the numbers, only like a third of their people were in Seattle. Everybody's all over the place because they had like distribution center in Indiana and like salespeople all over the place and supply chain in mostly in Vietnam. So it's like a global organization, but they were very fixated on, oh, we can't get into our crappy little office in Seattle. And it turns out that not being in the office made things better for everybody, at least from my perspective, as I was trying to do some change and adoption work there, which, by the way, is the topic that we're going to talk about in a minute. You know, I was trying to do some change in adoption work there, and they very much had this like home team, we're doing what we're doing in the Seattle office, and then we'll like go do what we're going to do for everybody else. And it turned out that like flattening effect of, you know, let's just, whatever this meeting is or this content, let's figure out a bunch of different ways to present it, and let's figure out how to present the same thing at like four different time slots, and people will just join and everybody has the same experience, which is going to be as good or bad as it's going to be, you know, based on our like preparation and materials and so forth. And I feel like that's a lot better. I've gotten to the point where I'm going to miss that once it starts to go away a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I'm hoping at least some of it sticks around. To your point about like figuring out the best way to do the whatever it is, I was working remotely, but Shopify used to be a Ontario-based, I mean, technically still is, Ontario-based company. And so I was already a weirdo for being remote, and almost all my colleagues were in Toronto or Ottawa, which has changed in the last year, obviously. In addition to closing down the main offices, they have also just been hiring all over the world. And so to that point about time zones, I'm doing a kickoff event next week. and looking at the people that have signed up that are interested, I'm also going to also need to do kickoff events for other time zones, which is totally fine. And I'm happy to do that. But it's really been the last few months that that has even become like a norm, even for a company that has ostensibly been worldwide. But to bring it back to change management, some of that too has just been like a cultural shift of figuring out what's the best way to convey this information. Whereas it used to be, the default used to be, let's have a meeting. And now there's just so many better ways to do things that aren't meetings.
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah, I feel like the default for a lot of these things has been, you know, the question of how do you get an idea across to people inside the organization. And I feel like in the before times, the kind of generic solution was tell people once in a meeting when they're sort of impatiently waiting to get out of the meeting, or, you know, their mind is on something else. But you tell people once in a meeting, and then you send them one like memo or email about it that they will not read. And then they're done. They've been like communicated with, and you know, if people don't get the message, or people don't really like receive the message and process it, then like screw them. You know, they should have paid attention in the meeting and carefully considered, deeply contemplated the email that somebody sent them. And having that channel kind of drop away, and like having online meetings and like distributed work feels so different, I think it's actually been a real good opportunity to give people different ways to like send and receive some of these messages or communications, and maybe even give people a shot who aren't like, you know, people who aren't like auditory learners. I know I'm a person like that, where, you know, you can tell me something 8 times and then eventually I'll read it somewhere and I'll remember it for life. And, you know, a lot of people are the opposite, and there's the sort of layer of like accessibility concerns with, you know, you already mentioned the big room with one person talking at the front of the room. And, you know, I've got a hearing impairment. I've been the person at the front of the room talking and not hearing the people in the back of the room. And, I've also been the person in the back of the room, like not hearing a goddamn thing that's happening in the meeting. And we do have some real sort of opportunities to make things materially better, both in terms of how people participate and how, you know, how they can sort of show up to a meeting. And yeah, I really hope we don't lose that in our rush to, you know, have every to shove 100 people in a giant conference room and have them, you know, express viral particles all over one another in some sort of grand meeting.
Yeah, I do. There's definitely some things I miss. Like, there's people I miss being around. Like, it's been very strange not seeing people, or even having the chance to see certain people in person, or just, you know, spend time with them professionally or not. And yeah, a lot of the reason I like the meeting I mentioned that I'm scheduling, I don't really run a lot of meetings. I mostly help other people run meetings, or I create or co-create learning materials that are meant to be used kind of asynchronously or kind of self-serve. So actually scheduling meetings and figuring out the best time to have a meeting is just a whole science that I am not good at. I was talking to my coworkers about like, when should I schedule these? I don't even know. What's the best way to do this? And the answers are very early in the morning or very late in the evening, and that's fine. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that, kind of tying it back to change management, a lot of the stuff I do is, well, my primary job is I do accessibility program management, basically. So I primarily work with people that do UX work, front-end developers, people that do research, people that do content, all that kind of stuff. But because I'm a specialist in a field, I also get requests for support from all over the org. So while I'm, you know, on paper supporting one discipline, I'm usually talking to people at least once a day from all over the company, and which, you know, requires some amount of task switching, but I've just kind of accepted that doing any sort of advocacy related work is going to come with it some sort of cross-discipline communication. So I end up talking to people that are in talent, like people are doing hiring. I talk to people that are doing support for our customers, and kind of being comfortable with all of that. And then weirdly becoming a person that people go to when they're talking about, like, you seem to be pretty good at talking to people about stuff. How can I get better at talking to people about stuff? And that's kind of been more recent, where people are asking for my advice and support and helping to, like, share things that they're working on, which is not something I ever imagined I would be doing, but here we are. But yeah, I think it comes with the territory of doing any sort of work where you're having to kind of poke at people and prod at them and chip away at them over long periods of time. Because change always takes time, for better or for worse. Like, any sort of true systemic change takes time. So being patient is a virtue I never thought I would possess, but here we are.
You sort of describe yourself as an expert in something who's trying to, like, transmit that or get change the way things are happening. I feel like everything I know about change management kind of comes from that same perspective, right? Of, like, I do my, like, lean and continuous improvement stuff, and part of that is just getting changes to stick, or, like, motivating people to change their behavior and the way they think about their work. It's such a strange secondary skill to have that I think increasingly is becoming a more important one. But there's a paradox in there, which is, I remember looking at some research from ProSci, the ad car folks, right? Like, they'll sell you lots of research on change management kind of crapola. And one thing that I remembered seeing in there that really terrified me was they do a bunch of, you know, longitudinal, like, surveys of what are employees' preferences around, like, change and communication and stuff in the workplace. And they ask a simple question, which I'll characterize as sort of, who do you want to receive messages from about changes that are important to you? And, like, the usual stuff. When something is afoot, you know, you want to hear kind of what's changing from, like, your leadership, right? Like the big boss. And you want to hear, like, what does it mean for me? Maybe from your, like, supervisor or somebody that's closer to you. And way down at the bottom of the responses, 2% of respondents said they want to hear about the change from the, like, consultant or the change management person. When I first encountered that, two things happened. First, I thought about all the times where I was, like, sending messages to people and not being the right person to do that. So a little course correction there, and all for the better. But then the second thing was, I realized my entire approach to change management activities when I have to do it is, what do they call the people that operate a Muppet? They've got some, like, the
puppeteer.
No, not a puppeteer, the Muppets. They're like the Henson folks.
Oh.
It's like you perform the Muppet or something like that, right?
That makes sense.
Some transformation. You're not just sticking your hand up some, like, orange creature's ass, right?
But there is people that are truly experts at that. There is an apparent transformation. Yeah. I don't know what the word for that is, but yeah.
Whatever it is, I'm sure it's a lovely word.
We can look it up later. You can add a postscript.
This may appear in an important addendum. To this episode. But anyways, it's that puppeteer idea. So my job is to basically puppeteer the, like, project sponsors and directors and managers and stuff, and, like, give them their talking points and, like, you know, ask them to, hey, do me a favor and just, like, mention this thing or send this email or whatever. And it's such a strange place to be in, but it's, at least for the sorts of projects I'm doing, it seems to be more effective. And I think is also an example of something that I probably wouldn't have noticed how what I was doing before was suboptimal, because it basically worked, right? People were in the office, especially when I would be, like, the fancy consultant coming in to visit the office, there's a certain amount of, like, for about 30 seconds, people will pay attention to what you have to say in that context. And I made that work. But then having learned something and gotten a little better about this piece of it, is something that I can hopefully continue with, you know, even as things go back to normal or whatever euphemism we're using.
A word that comes to mind for that, I still don't remember the Muppet word, but a word we've been using a lot in my team is enablement. I spend a lot of my time not running workshops or telling people how to make things more accessible, but helping them discover the resources that are available and then helping them take those back to their team and figuring out however they should best work for them. So a little bit of it is kind of helping people figure out how they should adjust their process or experiments they should do in their process based on, you know, the information they're learning about how to make things more accessible. And so I will often turn around, like very, very purposefully, I'll get, say, a request for a training session. For example, like a team come to me for a request about training and they want like workshops. And I was like, look, A, I don't have time. B, I've been talking to you for the last like 3 months and I know that you've made a lot of progress and that you've done a lot of work in this area. Why don't we turn it into you teaching each other? And so over a couple months, we ended up planning a very short talk series that they gave for their team and also that was available for everyone across the whole company could participate if they wanted. And so did that take work from me? Yes. Like we would have periodic meetings. We did reviews of the material. Like it was definitely like some hours of my time, but it wasn't as much as time as it would have had to spend making them a specialized customized workshop for them when they mm-hmm. were able to spend that time digging deeper into the stuff they'd already been doing and then sharing it with other people, which then makes it seem a little bit more approachable for other people. And I got messages from people I'd never talked to before in the company, because this was also a team that's kind of outside my kind of main umbrella. And so that was really helpful for other people to see. And it was also helpful for me to see how the team had actually like digested the stuff that they had been learning. So that's just an example of a thing I was able to do that did create change, but that wasn't me going in and being like, here's how to do it. It was more figure it out yourselves, but I will help you figure it out versus, you know, sending them off and not giving them any sort of support.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. You know, there's a new term that I've been using instead of change management that I think you just sort of described exactly what the essence of this is and that experience you just shared, which is, and this came from a typo, but, you know, a useful typo, which is readiness and adoption is what you call it. So instead of saying change management, you just talk about readiness and adoption, because it's, you know, you have to figure out, are people ready for whatever it is? And are people going to adopt whatever it is? And it kind of takes for granted the idea that sort of similar to your enablement kind of concept, that whatever it is probably already exists. With readiness and adoption, it's like, are people ready to do whatever it is you need them to do? And are they ready to adopt whatever it is? And you just kind of take as granted or as given that the thing already exists, right? So we're just enabling people to use it or whatever you want to call it. And then the joke is that the "and" in readiness and adoption stands for change management.
Oh, so thing in that vein. Yes. Similar. I've also been using that community readiness model. I actually included it in my kind of scoping plan for the year as a kind of one of the frameworks I'm using. So I presented that as a sort of like introduction to the leadership folks that I was talking to about kind of where we are in our sort of accessibility journey as an organization. So yeah, I've been using that model. I've also been using the readiness as well as the kind of the chasm model, where there's sort of trying to get from early adopters. Early adopters to the early majority of a way of thinking or a way of doing something. And both of those have been very useful in communicating kind of like the where are we in the process and kind of in the growth. And that kind of idea of like, this is a thing that's going to happen. Where do you want to be when it happens? And kind of like recognizing that organizations go through kind of like periods of growth and grief almost and change and kind of denial and all those different things, kind of at a macro scale. And just being like, yes, you're going to have a bunch of feelings about this, but it's happening at some point. So deal with it. And kind of letting people do that on their own time or sort of at their own pace. And it's also one of the things I found enjoyable in this sort of weird role I found myself in is sort of identifying those, you might call them allies or co-conspirators or kind of whatever your take on it is, but finding those people along the way that like will really take some of that energy and run with it is always really fulfilling when you have a person that is really picking up what you're putting down. And not only are they jazzed about it, they're so jazzed about it, they will go out of their way to work with other people who are sort of on the fence, kind of on your behalf without you asking them. That's spectacular. That's the best.
Yeah, that is great. You got your like official sponsors and then the whole like sort of sponsor coalition, right? Like the people that'll come on and do your work for you once you get them excited about it.
Which I think comes back to your puppeteering idea. It sounds a little sinister, but I don't think it is inherently sinister.
Who's the Muppet that you would like to hang out with? And who's the Muppet you would like to eat as a meal?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me like, which of the Muppets I am. Which of the Muppets would I eat? Well, there's a bunch of them that are actually chickens, right? So
yeah.
Sure. Uh-huh. Which one would I like to hang out with? I was always a big fan of that. Oh, I'm not going to remember what their names are. There was the band. There was Animal and Dr.
Dr. Teeth?
Dr. Teeth. Yeah. I was always a big Dr. Teeth fan.
And Janice, right?
Janice. Yes. Yeah. I always liked the band. I would hang out with the band. Fozzie. I was kind of a Fozzie fan. He just seems silly. Like straight up Muppets. As far as like the like Sesame Street goes, definitely Grover.
Excellent.
My bedroom carpet was basically Grover? Like was that like hot that like high pile, super flammable, 70s you know carpet. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I may have a new closing question for this show. Yeah, I don't know. I feel compelled to come up with an answer for myself, but I don't know. You know, a lot of the Muppets are inherently hangoutable. I think that's part of the appeal. Exactly. So I guess I would say Miss Piggy, because I would want to, like, if stuff was going to get real, Miss Piggy, you know.
Yeah. She knows martial arts.
This is true. Fashion icon.
Yeah, she's got it all.
Yep. Yeah. So I would hang out with Miss Piggy, and I would eat Sam the Eagle because Sam the Eagle is the embodiment of everything that I hate in the world.
Bravo! What a good answer.
Sam the Eagle. Put him on a plate.
Delicious. Bastard. What does he taste like?
Cigarette ash.
Mm.
Yeah. Devin, where do the good people find you?
I'm pretty much on Twitter. You can search for my name on Twitter. I do not check my LinkedIn messages. Do not message me on LinkedIn.
Excellent. Thank you for joining me today and chatting a little bit about our weird experiences becoming accidentally proficient at change management or whatever the heck else you want to call it.
It's a pleasure.